Hello, this is Eileen, and I will be reading the News Gazette today for you for Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. Begin with the first article. Several detained in ICE raids. At least one said to be here visiting on recent tourist visa. In Champaign by Julie Wirth. At least four people were picked up in raids by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Champaign on Sunday. And several more on Monday, according to immigrant advocates. Ricardo Diaz of the CU Immigration Forum, which monitors federal immigration enforcement actions, said he knew of four people, three Guatemalan and one Mexican, swept up by federal authorities on Sunday morning, and agents went to at least one more home at 7 a.m. Monday. Lucia Maldonado, Latino family liaison for the Urbana School District, said she knew of one man picked up on Sunday and three members of another family on Monday, including a man visiting the U.S. on a tourist visa. He was scheduled to be released on bail today from a detention facility in St. Louis, she said. Maldonado and Diaz declined to provide names or more details. The Federal Immigration Service did not respond to News Gazette inquiries Monday and Tuesday. Diaz and Maldonado said ICE, as the immigration agency is known, has been conducting pickups about once a month in Champaign-Urbana under both the Obama and Trump administrations. But this one was larger and started on a weekend when children were home to see parents taken away, Diaz and Maldonado said. Maldonado said witnesses spotted five vans during one stop, which means that at least five or more agents are here. Usually you hear about one or two cars, so hearing about five is concerning. Diaz said ICE typically warns local authorities that it plans to be in the area, but won't give a specific time. Laisha Meadards, spokeswoman for the Champaign Police Department, said she could not verify whether or not ICE agents were in Champaign on Monday. She referred questions to the Department of Homeland Security office in Chicago. The Chicago Office of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a division of Homeland Security, has jurisdiction over Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, and Kansas. Calls there were referred to the Washington, D.C. media office. An email inquiry was not returned as of late Tuesday. Diaz on Monday was trying to track the number of people detained and verified their whereabouts with federal authorities. Information tends to trickle in, he said, as some people are picked up at work and their families won't find out until they fail to come home, he said. Work won't necessarily call and say, Joe didn't show up, he said. Detainees are often taken to the Springfield or Indianapolis field offices for processing, but also St. Louis or Chicago, Diaz said. They were usually held in one of three detention facilities paid for by the federal government, including Tri-County Detention Center in Olin near Carbondale, or facilities in Effingham, or Sangamon counties, he said. The Immigration Service usually provides an alien number given to each detainee so advocates can help families track them down. It's really nice to tell the families where they're at and where they need to start planning to go and make sense of it, Diaz said. People go into crisis mode, but they don't know who to call. Maldonado said a man who was here on a tourist visa was supposed to be released on bail from the Tri-County facility Tuesday, but the volunteer who drove there to pick him up learned he had been transferred to the facility in St. Louis. The volunteer hoped to pick him up there today. He just got here a couple of weeks ago just to visit somebody, said Maldonado, who spoke to a family member. The family showed the agent his visa to no avail, she said. She didn't know if the man had charges pending that would have made him a target for immigration services. Those on the ICE list are there for a reason, Diaz said. But it could range from criminal activity to people who have simply made a second attempt to enter the country illegally. In the last couple of months, agents have also picked up people who failed to show up for a court appointment. It's a catch-22, he said, because people fear if they do show up, they'll be detained indefinitely. Why go to court at all if they're going to nail you anyway? It's just become a vicious cycle of fostering non-compliance, he said. While the Obama administration deported more than 2 million illegal immigrants, the government focused on people who posed a threat to national security or public safety, or those who had arrived since 2014. President Donald Trump's executive order widened the parameters to include anyone with an outstanding deportation order, those convicted of any criminal offense, those who committed fraud, and those accused but not yet convicted of a crime. It creates a lot of panic for people, Maldonado said. A lot of people are assuming that just because of the way they look, they could be questioned or picked up or arrested. Word of a raid travels fast through the immigrant community, Diaz said. You can guarantee, he said, that fewer families will be out shopping or sending their children to school over the next few days. Not just those whose parents have been picked up, but other families who are afraid to leave the house. Children concerns. The Immigration Forum and other groups have been conducting Know Your Rights training for advocacy groups and school officials, as well as immigrants, so they know what to do if immigration goes into their home, Maldonado said. A lot of times, they're looking for somebody who doesn't live there anymore. If people open their doors, they risk being questioned, she said. The last session drew 150 people, Diaz said. One important component of the training, helping parents fill out a power of attorney for someone to take care of their children if they're detained. Understandably, that's the biggest source of anxiety for families. Most of them won't even ask you questions about how to protect themselves. They are so concerned about their children, Maldonado said. What happens if they get arrested? Who will take care of their kids? Most of the families have been in the United States for years, and their children were either born here or arrived when they were very young, she said. This is their home, so even just thinking about moving back to some other place that they don't even know is scary for them, Maldonado said. These are people who really have done everything they could to get documented, and they would do anything they could to get documented. There really is not a way to do so. The process for legal immigration is backed up for years, and for those who came illegally, there's no path to legal status, she said. The next article, Marlin's turn. Hiring police chief, city administrator will be her first priorities, by Natalie Wickman in Urbana. The city has a new mayor for the first time in 12 years, and residents can expect to see some changes starting with the hiring of a city administrator. Diane Marlin, the Democratic candidate and longtime alderwoman, won Urbana's mayoral election Tuesday with 4,266 votes, beating Republican Rex Bradfield, who got 680 votes. After she is sworn in May 1st, Marlin said her first priorities will be getting searches underway for a city administrator and new chief of police. The administrator role, which coordinates work among city departments, was eliminated by current mayor Laurel Pressing about 10 years ago. Police Chief Patrick Connolly resigned March 20th, citing a family medical situation and a need to be closer to long-distance relatives. Marlin said her next task will be required things such as preparing the city budget to be passed June 30th and negotiating contracts. After that, Marlin said she'd focus on listening to businesses. I want to initiate conversations with our representatives from various components of the business community, see where challenges are for doing business in Urbana, and thinking about what we'll do to address that, she said. Marlin said that will be the beginning of her work to foster economic growth in the city or change the narrative of Urbana being second best to Champaign. Another issue Marlin will face is the Illinois Supreme Court's decision to send the Carl Tax case back down to a lower court. The decision was a disappointment for sure, Marlin said. We're going to have to sit down and look at the financial options. That's all I'm going to say about that at this point. Residents can also expect to see a push for community building among different neighborhoods. Marlin said she was inspired by the Neighborhood Leadership Initiative in Dayton, Ohio, a 12-week course that teaches understanding about problems throughout a city and encourages civic engagement. I would like something like that, Marlin said. There's no funding for it. It would probably be a volunteer effort. Marlin said she's also open to hiring more police officers in a few months. Prussing led a push to hire 2 new officers this winter and wanted to add 3 more around summer. Champaign County Clerk Gordy Holton said turnout for this county consolidated election was higher than expected. He said, "This election usually receives 20,000 to 25,000 votes, but 26,547 votes were cast by the end of Tuesday. This is Bradfield's 3rd consecutive loss in the mayoral race, and he said it would be his last foray into politics. I thought I'd have more turnout than I did," he said. "I'm sad, but I'm not sorry I ran for this 3 times." The next article, 197-foot stack will soon be removed. Shorter one for new boiler will take its place in Champaign by Julie Worth. The campus skyline is about to change, but not from another apartment high-rise. One of the 2 concrete stacks that define Abbott Power Plant is being dismantled to make way for a new high-efficiency gas boiler system. The 197-foot south stack will be taken down piece by piece in the upcoming weeks, with preparation work already underway. The project is to be completed over the summer. Abbott is replacing the recently decommissioned 70-year-old stack and 2 1970s boilers with 2 new low-emission, high-efficiency gas boilers, according to the University of Illinois Facilities and Services. The new boilers, which use shorter stacks, are scheduled to be in operation by December. The original north stack remains in use for coal-fired boilers and will be unaffected by the project. Steam and electricity production service to campus buildings will continue as usual, as will educational tours and research of at the plant. Mike Larson, director of utilities production, said the $22.5 million project is a significant step in a 5-year master plan to increase steam production capacity, improve plant reliability and energy efficiency, and reduce emissions. "It's been several years in the making," he said Tuesday. Another boiler was replaced last year. All 3 were past their useful life, he said. The new boilers run on natural gas, with fuel oil as an emergency backup, Larson said. The $22.5 million project includes the boilers, piping, electrical work, stack removal, money for contingencies, and other new equipment, including boiler pumps and 2 deaerators to remove oxygen from water before it goes into the boilers. The project will be funded by energy savings and utility rates paid by campus units, Larson said. Crews from Omega Demolition, a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency certified subcontractor of project coordinator Barton Mallow Company, will dismantle the stack. They will build climbing platforms that can move down as work progresses on the stack, which has a diameter, base diameter of 15 feet and tapers to 9 feet at top. Crews will first remove the contain peeling exterior paint, then use hammers to break the stack into smaller sections. They will contain any dust created and deliver waste to an approved disposal site. Affiliated Engineers Incorporated is the project engineering firm, and Environmental Design International is the environmental consultant. Originally built in 1941, Abbott supplies 88% of the energy demand for the Urbana campus. More than 250 buildings use the steam produced at Abbott for heating. The cogeneration facilities produce both steam and electricity for campus. The next article, voters reject tax hike, okay sale, Champaign County Nursing Home. Board weighing its alternatives. In Urbana, Champaign County voters on Tuesday gave the county board the authority to sell the Champaign County Nursing Home and said no to tripling the property tax rate to support the facility. But Democrats, who have a two-vote majority on the 22-member board, aren't necessarily going to vote to sell the facility to a private operator, said Chris Alex, an Urbana Democrat who chairs the board's Finance Committee. One option that has been resurrected was suggested earlier by a consultant for the county hired. Form a local nonprofit organization with health care providers included to operate the facility. At this point, I think the failure of the tax increase referendum means we don't have any more financial resources to work with, Alex said. But the success of the sell referendum means we do have some other options in terms of looking at other structures. We may get a wider array of responses now when we go out into the community and look for potential partners to work with us on this. This could mean individuals who are interested in administering it, or local organizations that might be interested in cooperating in a consortium to operate the home, or individual companies that might be interested in operating it. This gives us a broader universe of options than we had yesterday. Alex said virtually any of the options we're talking about by law would be considered a sale. So I think the results of the sale referendum could not be read as a mandate. A lot of people I spoke to thought that the sale referendum was a way of giving the county board a broader list of solutions than just saying we want to sell to the first and highest bidder. But Champaign Republican Jim McGuire, who heads the GOP caucus on the board, said he thinks the board should move quickly to sell the facility. We want to do what the voters want us to do, which is sell the nursing home, he said. We should probably do that as quickly as we can, because with $3 million or $4 million of unpaid vendor bills and debt, we don't have the money to keep paying people. If we get someone to run it and improve the care and improve the services to the people who are there and maybe save some jobs, that's good. The proposal to raise the property tax rate from about 3 cents per $100 of assessed value to 10 cents per $100 of assessed valuation lost by about 3,000 votes, or 55.9% to 44.1%. The question of whether to sell or dispose of the nursing home passed by about 54% to 46%. County Board Chairman C. Pius Weibel, a Champaign Democrat, said the board's next step is to look at financial projections for a cash-strapped nursing home that don't include any more local funding. We're going to have to look at the finances. That's what is driving this, he said. We're going to have to look at some models and see what the next crisis is. Weibel said he wasn't surprised by the outcome. I'm not surprised that a tax increase failed, because we've all been saying that a state income tax increase is going to be coming up. I think everybody knows that it's going to happen. So people who know that are going to be less likely to support other tax increases. McGuire said he wasn't surprised by the failure of the property tax increase, but I wasn't so sure about the sale. We still get a lot of questions about where would the seniors go? Where would the people on Medicaid go? But I'm glad that the people came out and voted, McGuire said. They need to be involved in this critical issue. I think in the end, they'll be happier with people in a privately run institution. Under a list of scenarios that County Administrator Rick Snyder gave the board last month, the county board would have to begin the process to sell the home by ordering the county administration to initiate a request for proposals to solicit brokerage services to market it and manage the offer and sales process. Snyder estimated that the process would take about a year. At the time, Snyder said there was interest among private operators to buy the nursing home. He estimated the facility, which is less than 15 years old, could be worth $10 million to $12.7 million. But Alex said the nursing home is not an asset that anyone in Champaign County should be eager to see gone. The next article, local legend wins on last ballot. Joe Rittenhouse, a life remembered, in Bement. In a fitting tribute to one of the area's longest-serving public officials, Joe Rittenhouse was elected to another term as Bement Township's Road Commissioner Tuesday night, 2 days after he passed away at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Mr. Rittenhouse ran unopposed as usual. No one would dare take on the man who had been on the job for 55 of his 76 years, becoming one of the state's youngest highway commissioners when first elected in 1962. I have been told that Joe was the longest-running Illinois Township Highway Commissioner in the state of Illinois, said Charlie Montgomery, who holds the same job in nearby Monticello Township, and considered Mr. Rittenhouse a legend in his line of work, who went about the job with a passion second to none. Joe had a very unique relationship with the agricultural community in Bement Township when it came to the maintenance of the rural roads and the dedicated road easements, Montgomery said. Because of Joe's strong personality, he definitely had the farming community respect, whether they liked him or not. When he became known that he had passed away, it was too late to remove his name from the ballot. The election went on as usual, County Clerk Jennifer Harper said, and a replacement will be appointed by the Township Board at its May meeting. Mr. Rittenhouse was Bement through and through. A 47-year-old member of the Bement Masonic Lodge and a character member of the Piatt County Historical Society, who served for 58 years on the Bement Fire Protection District. And no one knew Piatt County roads like him, colleagues said. He was a very nice and very knowledgeable person, said Blue Ridge Highway Commissioner Rob Harper. He will be greatly missed. The next article, Hardin elected board's first black trustee, Parkland College, by Tom Kasich. In Champaign, the first black trustee in history of Parkland College and three veteran board members were elected Tuesday to the 7-member community college board. The newcomer, Parkland faculty member Rochelle Hardin, has been the subject of some controversy. An official with the Illinois Community College Trustees Association, Michael Monaghan, has insisted that she is ineligible for the seat, but Hardin has disputed the contention. "I'm actually not anticipating any legal problems," an ebullient Hardin said on Tuesday night. "Obviously, I think there will be some forces who still don't want me on the board, but legally speaking, I don't think they have any standing to bring a legal challenge. But if they do, I'm ready for that too." Others chosen Tuesday for the six-year terms were Board President Dana Trimble of Newman, who was reelected to a fourth term, and Greg Knott of St. Joseph. Bianca Green of Champaign, who had been appointed to fill a two-year term 2 years ago, was elected to serve the two remaining years on the term of former board member Tom Bennett. The unofficial vote totals for the candidates for the six-year terms were Trimble, 17,806 votes, Knott, 15,529, Hardin, 11,896, Rebel Burge, 5,892, E.J. Donaghy, 8,237, and Richard Taylor, 11,062. For the single two-year term, the results were Green, 9,431, Becky Densmore, 3,322, John Barry Howell, 5,277, and Kathleen Robbins, 5,502. Champaign County provided the greatest number of votes among the 12 counties in the Parkland District, and 9 of the 10 candidates were from Champaign County. The winners there were Trimble with 12,497 votes, Knott with 9,851, Hardin with 8,919, and Green with 7,780. The election featured 6 candidates for 3 six-year terms and 4 candidates for the single two-year term. It was the greatest number of candidates for the Parkland Board in its 50-year history. Hardin said she discovered in her campaign that people around here love Parkland College, and she thinks her 12 year as an English professor there helped her win. "I would like to believe that the years of teaching paid off and that some of my students voted for me," she said. "But in this kind of election, I think the people who turn out are the people who are really engaged. I think the people who voted in the municipal election are much more aware and read the papers and follow these kinds of things. Based on that, they made their decision, and I'm glad they made the decision they did." Knott said he was glad he and the two other veteran board members won the race. "I wasn't sure who the fourth person would be," he said. "We'll work with anyone who gets seated and help run the college. There are tough fiscal times ahead. I don't see that changing. We're three really solid board members who know what's going on, and I think it's a good thing that the three of us won." Okay, that's the end of the first half of the News Gazette. This has been Eileen for the Wednesday, April 5th, and I will be back shortly after a break. Bye-bye.